Thank you for joining us this afternoon for Del Mar Pharmaceuticals Shareholder Update Call and webcast to discuss the company's fiscal results for the second quarter of the 2019 fiscal year ending June 2019 and corporate update. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note today's call is being recorded. Today's webcast will be accompanied by a slide presentation that can be found under the IR calendar in the investor section of the company's website at www.delmarpharma.com. The company has also posted it on its homepage. At this time, I would like to remind our listeners that remarks being made during the calls may state management's intentions, hopes, beliefs, expectations, or predictions of the future. These are forward-looking statements that involve risks and uncertainties. Forward-looking statements on this call are made pursuant of the safe harbor provisions of the federal securities laws. These forward-looking statements are based on Del Mar's current expectations, and actual results could differ materially. As a result, you should not place undue reliance on any forward-looking statements. Some of the factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from those contemplated by such forward-looking statements are discussed in the periodic reports Del Mar Pharmaceuticals files with the Securities and Exchange Commission. These documents are available in the investors section of the company's website, www.delmarpharma.com, and on the Securities and Exchange Commission's website. We encourage you to review these documents. Joining me on the call from the Del Mar management team are Mr. Saeed Zarabian, President and CEO, Dr. Dennis Brown, Founder and Chief Scientific Officer, and Mr. Scott Prale, Chief Financial Officer. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to President and CEO, Mr. Saeed Zarabian.
Good afternoon, and thank you, everyone, for taking the time to join us on today's teleconference. Over the past year, our efforts have been focused on running the most streamlined and efficient clinical and operational organization possible, with the intention of extending our existing cash beyond expected final study results from the ongoing Phase 2 study on MD Anderson, as well as at least halfway through our first-line GBM study being executed at Sun Yat-sen University Cancer Center in China. To achieve the above, we've been working diligently with our clinical partners to enroll and advance these important Phase 2 studies as quickly and as effectively as possible. Consistent with previously stated objectives of expediting shareholder value creation, we have been executing the development plan for VAL-083, our therapeutic platform, by singularly focusing on the 60-plus percent of GBM patients with the MGMT unmethylated status, who get measurably inferior results given current approved therapies. Our second quarter of fiscal year 2019 was extremely productive given the advancement of VAL-083's two Phase 2 biomarker-driven clinical trials for MGMT unmethylated glioblastoma. The first study for recurrent GBM at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas, and the second study is a first-line GBM being executed at Sun Yat-sen University Cancer Center in Guangzhou, China. This acute focus on clinical trial execution of our two lead programs had led to advancements of both open-label trials, with the latest detailed results planned for presentation at the American Association for Cancer Research Conference, which is in Atlanta, Georgia, scheduled from March 29th to April 3rd, 2019. At this point, I'd like to provide an update on the two trials, the second-line Avastin-naive study being conducted at MD Anderson Cancer Center, which we refer to as the MDACC study. As of January 31st, 46 patients of a planned total number of 48 patients have been enrolled. So we anticipate announcing enrollment completion for this trial in the near future. In terms of trial results and observations, thus far, per the amended dosing levels approved in October of 2018, patients in this study have continued to demonstrate a safety profile well within the existing safety monitoring guidelines detailed in the study protocol. Similar to prior clinical experience, myelosuppression has been the most common adverse event observed. I think it's important to note that the rationale for the MDACC trial, which initiated in February of 2017, is based on the fact that approximately 60 to 66% of newly diagnosed GBM patients are grossly underserved via current therapies, as they have tumors with an unmethylated MGMT promoter, which is correlated with high expression of the DNA repair enzyme MGMT. It has been scientifically established that patients whose tumors exhibit this high expression of MGMT have a poor prognosis and significantly shorter progression-free survival and overall survival in comparison to patients with an unmethylated MGMT promoter and low MGMT expression. The goal of the MD Anderson study remains straightforward: to determine if treatment with VALO-83 improves overall survival for those patients who have progressed on temozolomide compared to historical controls. We look forward to announcing the trial's full enrollment and reporting data in the relatively near term. You may recall that we had forecasted enrollment completion by as early as the end of the 2018 calendar year, but the holiday season temporarily slowed down enrollment. As such, we're now forecasting full enrollment by the conclusion of Q1 calendar year 2019, which is some 9 months earlier than originally planned. As I mentioned before, we have two more patients to go out of the originally planned 48 to fully enroll this study. There is a synergistic benefit from running the MD Anderson and the Sun Yat-sen University in parallel, because during the course of these studies and based on published data from both, we have identified a potential opportunity to treat a pre-TMZ maintenance setting population. Per standard protocol, following surgery and radiation, GBM patients receive an initial regimen of temozolomide, followed by several additional courses of treatment with TMZ, temozolomide, in what is called the maintenance setting, maintenance stage. We believe that for the approximately two-thirds of patients for whom TMZ is not effective due to their MGMT methylation status, VALO-83 may be a far better treatment option during this maintenance setting. We are currently working with MD Anderson to investigate the possibility of conducting a phase two study in these pre-TMZ maintenance patients. Moving to this patient population would bring us one step closer to treating U.S. patients in the frontline, similar to what we are currently doing with the frontline patients in our phase two study in China. Moving to the China study, which is for first-line newly diagnosed MGMT unmethylated patients, this study started in September of 2017. As of January 31st, we had enrolled 14 out of a total of 30 patients in the study, almost halfway in enrollment. As a reminder, the patients in this trial are being treated with VALO-83 in combination with radiotherapy as a potential alternative to the current standard of care temozolomide radiation regimen, which forms the current first-line treatment for this patient population. From an operational standpoint, this trial is being conducted under the terms of our collaboration with Guangxi Wuzhou Pharmaceuticals. The study's principal clinical goals are to confirm the safety of the three-day, every 21-day VALO-83 dosing regimen in combination with radiotherapy and to investigate progression-free and overall survival outcomes of the combination of VALO-83 and radiotherapy, again, in MGMT unmethylated GBM patients. Dose-confirming cohorts studying 20, 30, and 40 mg per meter squared per day times 3 days every 21 days have been completed. Based on the dose confirmation, we have selected 30 mg per meter squared for combination with irradiation for the treatment of newly diagnosed MGMT unmethylated GBM patients. As indicated in previous documents and presentations, we view VALO-83 as a platform asset with the potential to treat multiple solid tumors in a broad range of oncology indication. This belief is anchored by the ongoing data we are collecting, along with the more than 40 clinical trials previously completed by the National Cancer Institute. As such, we will continue a fiscally responsible manner to explore what is possible with this world-class active compound and with the partners at MD Anderson Yatsen University. I do want to emphasize that these other additional solid tumors will be pursued in a serial fashion, and we will not be spending limited funds on pursuing these other indications until the current GBM recurrent setting at MD Anderson and first-line setting in China have yielded hopefully positive results. At this point, I'd like to turn this to Dennis to talk about some additional advancements in our core science. Dennis?
Great. Thanks, Saeed. This quarter, there was a beautiful paper that was published related to additional mechanisms of action and opportunities to go forward with our compound and other indications besides GBM. It was published in a journal called Cell Death and Diseases by Nature Publishing, and continues to explore the really relatively unique mechanism of action approaching double-strand breaks in cancer cells, particularly in S phase. We've been able to show over the past few years how efficient we've been able to target the DNA with a double-strand break as compared to a monofunctional single-strand break with temozolomide. And in this paper, continues to explore the repair mechanisms that we can overcome, such as homologous recombination. And these types of repair, HR repair, is critical in some of the resistance we've seen in ovarian cancer. And in this paper, we explore the other DNA targeting agents like topoisomerase inhibitors, like irinotecan, as well as the new novel PARP inhibitors, suggesting a very safe and efficient opportunity to combine these therapies in the future. So we're very excited about the quality of science that goes on still in our collaboration with wonderful institutions. And this, in addition to our work coming up at AACR, I think continues to show progress on really developing a unique targeted agent. Saeed?
Thank you, Dennis. Before turning the call over to Scott, who will provide the financial results update for the period, I'd like to comment on where we sit with NASDAQ, as well as comment on the warrant exercise and exchange that we completed in November of 2018. As you might know, we received notification from NASDAQ in December regarding our non-compliance with a minimum bid price requirement. We recently filed an 8K noting that NASDAQ has given us an extension until June 25, 2019 to regain compliance. We are currently assessing our options to cure the deficiency and are optimistic that the continuing expected data from our ongoing Phase 2 studies will provide an opportunity to mitigate this risk in a timely fashion. With respect to the warrant exercise and exchange, in November, we raised gross proceeds of $790,000 from the warrant exercises while reducing our fully diluted share count outstanding by approximately 2 million shares due to the exchange. This transaction allowed us to receive non-dilutive cash and to continue to simplify our cap table. I'll now turn the call over to Scott, who will provide a summary of our financial profile for a quarter ended December 31st, 2018. Scott?
Thank you, Saeed, and thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. I'm going to provide a high-level review of our financial results for the 3 and 6 month periods ended December 31st, 2018. I'd like to remind everyone that our full financial results for the quarter ended December 31st, 2018 are available in our Form 10-Q filed with the SEC at sec.gov. And this SEC filing is also available on our website at delmarpharma.com under the Investors tab. For the 3 months ended December 31st, 2018, the company reported a net loss of approximately $1.8 million or 8 cents per share compared to a net loss of approximately $3.2 million or 14 cents per share for the quarter ended December 31st, 2017. Research and development expenses decreased to approximately $940,000 during the 3 months ended December 31st, 2018, from approximately $2.1 million for the 3 months ended December 31st, 2017. The decrease is largely attributable to a decrease in clinical development costs, personnel, preclinical research, as well as non-cash share-based compensation expense during the current 3 months compared to the prior 3 months. General and administrative expenses decreased during the 3 months ended December 31st, 2018 to approximately $875,000 from approximately $1 million for the 3 months ended December 31st, 2017, largely due to a decrease in professional fees and personnel, partially offset by higher non-cash share-based compensation expense in the current quarter compared to the prior quarter. For the six-month period ended December 31, 2018, the company reported a net loss of approximately $3.8 million or 16 cents per share compared to a net loss of approximately $5.8 million or 31 cents per share for the 6 months ended December 31, 2017. For the current six-month period, research and development expenses decreased to $2 million during the current period from $4.1 million for the 6 months ended December 31, 2017. The decrease in research and development expense was largely attributable to a decrease in clinical development costs, personnel, preclinical research, intellectual property, and travel costs during the current period compared to the prior period. General and administrative expenses were approximately $1.9 million for the 6 months ended December 31, 2018, compared to approximately $1.8 million for the 6 months ended December 31, 2017. A significant portion of the increase was due to an increase in non-cash share-based compensation expense and personnel costs in the current period compared to the prior period. Partially offsetting the impact of these two items were lower professional fees and travel costs during the current 6 months compared to the prior 6 months. With respect to our cash resources, based on our updated budget that reflects the strategic direction of Delmar, we believe we have cash resources to fund our planned operations to the middle of calendar 2019. If anyone has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them during the Q&A session at the end of the call. I'd like to now pass the call back to Said. Said?
Thank you, Scott. I'd just like to quickly conclude by thanking our longstanding shareholders for your continued support. As we continue to progress our strategic plan, the management and board of Delmar Pharmaceuticals remains dedicated to executing the clinical and corporate growth plan I've outlined during today's call. I will now turn the call over to the operator to commence the question and answer session of the conference. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, you may press the star and one on your touch-tone phone to ask a question. You may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Once again, that is star and one to ask a question, and we can pause a few moments to allow questions to enter the queue. And we can take our first question from Jason Colbert with Dawson James. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Said. Congratulations. Tremendous amount of progress. Can you talk a little bit about the MADAC study? And since that study is now almost completely enrolled, given the fact that the standard of care seems to be shifting around in GBM and this is Avastin and naive, what can you learn from the study? What have you learned already about dosing and what kind of things should we expect going forward? I mean, clearly it's very interesting when we start talking about the frontline setting, which this study is not about, but so I want to understand how this study kind of informs you to move in that direction.
Sure. I think one of the things I want to talk about is the dosing. As you know, we started the study at MD Anderson with a dose-ranging portion, and we eventually, by October of last year, settled both at MD Anderson as well as in the China patient population, although at different stages of disease. We found that the 30 mg per meter squared seems to be that right area between safety and efficacy. So that was one that came clear by running both trials in parallel. But more importantly, last November, we published at the SNO a very interesting paper that showed the patients that are currently getting first-line treatment under GBM go through a phasing process. First, they get the surgery. Then they get concurrent temozolomide, a three-week cycle of temozolomide as chemotherapy and radiation. And then afterwards, all patients, MGMT methylated or unmethylated, go through a maintenance setting of temozolomide, which is 5 days on the drug every month. And we were able to glean out of the data that the patients that stayed on temozolomide for an extended period of time were less able to absorb new therapies and certainly even participate fully in our treatment. We further went back and looked into the papers and looked at a Hecky paper that was published in 2005 that showed progression-free survival for GBM patients is close to 5.5 months when they have the MGMT unmethylated status or the repair enzyme, and it's twice that, 10.3 months for the patients who do not have that. And this is why you've heard us continue to enhance and emphasize our focus on the MGMT unmethylated population, because the current therapy seems to have a minimum effect on them. So as we were going through the MD Anderson study, and we will have the readout for that study according to the protocol 90 days after the last patient enrolled. We also identified this new maintenance setting population where we think it's a larger population to begin with. It's a healthier population because they haven't progressed with potentially DNA damage and bone marrow damage and lower platelet count, et cetera. And that's where we are now looking at possibly expanding the MD Anderson trial to. We do have a protocol amendment that's going through the process. It's unknown at this point when that amendment will be approved, but we will definitely inform the market when it is and if they request any changes. But that setting that we call maintenance setting, which is right after the first chemo regimen and the radiation regimen, but before the patients are kept on temozolomide for 3, 6, sometimes even longer, is a very attractive setting. The second data point that led us towards that setting is the data from China, which we're beginning to look at. And as I mentioned, we will have a presentation at AACR March 29th to April 3rd, where we will supply some additional detailed data about that study.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Once again, that is star and one to ask a question, and we can pause a few moments to allow any additional questions to enter the queue. And we do have a follow-up from Jason Colbert. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks. I just wanted to follow up because two things. One, can you talk with me a little bit about how methylated status is determined, how easy a test is that? And if we're right and we get data out of China showing the impact when you treat unmethylated GBM patients, you know, you could see a very different result than what we're used to seeing with TMZ. And, of course, I'm speculating, but it just seems to make so much sense.
Well, I think we all believe that, Jason, based on the mechanism of action. The temozolomide works on the 06 guanine, which MGMT enzyme repairs readily. Valo 83, as you know, works on the 07 guanine and also breaks the double strand, so the enzyme MGMT is unable to repair the damage done to the DNA by Valo 83. Now, I want to emphasize that this decision of going after the MGMT unmethylated is not due to any restrictions with Valo 83, but it's rather a business decision. We believe we will be able to run a much nimbler, lower cost, faster trial by going after an underserved population rather than trying to serve the whole GBM population at one time. There's no reason Valo 83 is not going to be as efficacious or as safe in all GBM population. It's just we believe, as I said, that we can get to the end zone of getting an approval for Valo 83 in the MGMT unmethylated population much more rapidly and much less expensively by going after that population. So
I would just add, this is Dennis. Jason, these methodologies are now very well established commercially as well as at the academic center. So I think we've been very also fortunate. We're not pioneering this assay or recognizing a population that's not known to all these clinicians. So the questions you're asking are dead on. We're really servicing a problem that's been well recognized, and we won't have to pioneer a unique assay that would be difficult to cross-validate like some other situations that have occurred for other companies with other products, you know, over the past 10, 15, 20 years.
all the sites we have been working with in prior trials, as well as all the physicians we're currently working on, automatically run the MGMT unmethylated testing as part of the initial diagnosis. There's at least four commercial companies who have the assay available. We will want to do some work to pick a single one during our phase three trial just for consistency. But as Dennis said, we don't have to introduce a new diagnostic into the physician's network and into their protocol. It's already being run, and we're just piggybacking on top of it to get to a more enriched patient population that may further benefit from Valo 83.
Perfect. Thank you. And just to make sure I understand, you're talking about from a business decision point of view, by working in unmethylated GBM patients, you need less power to see the same signal versus the mixed population. Fantastic. Thank you.
That's right, Jason.
We need less patients and less powering because those patients have a progression-free survival of 5.3 months versus 10.3 for the methylated patients. So by taking the lower threshold and the patients who don't have any benefit, we believe we'll be able to get through the clinic and hopefully to approval faster.
Yeah, very exciting. Thank you so much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. And it appears we have no further questions at this time. I can go ahead and turn it back over to Saeed for any additional or closing remarks.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. I appreciate the questions. Jason, thank you very much for the tough but always cogent questions. And we look forward to the next quarter and being able to provide, as I said, by end of March at the AACR conference, we expect to be able to provide much more detailed information about both of the ongoing trials. Thank you again, everyone.